Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Brandon, Logan Paul in Money in the Bank. He gets to skip the typical qualification match process, and I guess because of his celebrity status or write-in campaign with a lot of hearts on dotted I's from 14-year-old girls, but he is in. What do you think of that news, and what do you think about the pros and cons of doing it and how they did it and what it means for the match?
I think he is a good addition to the match. I mean, we've seen time and time again that Logan Paul has exceeded people's expectations. He is obviously very good at this. He's a good heel. He does a pretty good job on the microphone. So really, as easy as it is to, you know, dislike him for a myriad of reasons, he is a good fit for WWE, for what they do, and for a match like this, because he's going to get some cool spots in, he's going to take some bumps, and it's going to be a spectacle. So I think adding him to the match overall is a net positive. I don't care for the way that they did it. I would just prefer that they cross I's and dot T's, and or the other way around. I would prefer that they keep it consistent. So, you know, everyone else had to qualify for this match. So if that's the case, then I'd like to see Logan qualify as well. I at the very least, I would like to hear from Adam Pearce or someone in management to say that, hey, this is why we feel like Logan Paul deserves a spot without necessarily earning one. And we didn't get that. I mean, I understand ultimately why they do it. But I would have preferred something different.
If this was laid out in front of you earlier today or last week or whatever, a few days ago, pick your time. And they said, all right, we're going to add Logan Paul to the match. What's the best way to do it? There's no perfect way because, you put him on TV in a match, it's giving away a Logan Paul match. And those are sort of few and far between. There's a novelty to him. Somebody then has to lose to him. Who is that? Who also makes sense being in a Money in the Bank qualifier? Does anyone come to mind who might have, you know, cause, I mean, you can make the case, hey, advertise Logan Paul's wrestling on Raw against somebody and he wins. Or maybe that somebody gets attacked and he takes advantage of it. So it's an angle that leads to a feud for his opponent or something like that. But at least then he's sort of qualified, even if he gets in not through winning, but kind of like what happened with the DQ in the women's qualifier, having a DQ type finish that leads to it. Something like that would have probably solved the issue, but it would have been giving away a Logan Paul match. The other argument is, and you said you understand why they did it, it's like, yeah, we'll take the hit on the way we did it because we just want him in the match and we don't want him to have to wrestle another match because that's expensive, or we don't want to waste matches and the novelty, wear it out. And we'll just take the hit, even though it's not logical and makes management look bad. Kind of elaborate on that.
Yeah, I think that you're right. It's them taking the hit for reasons that I think are they're explicable. I mean, they're things that you can get away with on occasion, but when you've set a consistent boundary for how to qualify for these matches, I wish that they would keep it consistent or at least go a little bit further, take it a step further in acknowledging why you aren't. So in this case, Logan Paul comes out, he cuts his promo, he simply says that he's in the match because he talked to management, and that's that. I think that that's a time where you see Adam Pearce on screen, and Pearce explains why this was done, why Logan Paul deserves a spot in the match, or if he disagrees with it. But management, you know, made the call, and that's how it's going to be. They delved into that territory back a few weeks ago when they had Pearce need to check with management in order to book non-Raw talent on Raw when AJ Styles showed up before the Night of Champions match. And I liked that they did that, so I would have liked to have seen them continue that trend here.
Is there any chance Logan Paul wins?
I would.
Have you processed that possibility?
So after he confirmed that he was in the match and they put the graphic up, I looked at the field and I thought to myself that there's only two strong possibilities. I think Logan Paul is one and Damian Priest is the other. I mean, they tend to like to put it on heels. And I guess, you know what, I'll add an outlier there with LA Knight, because I think the crowd is obviously getting behind him significantly. His booking does not suggest a person who is about to receive a push, although this would not be unlike WWE to job a guy out only to then put the briefcase on him and say that it fixes all the problems. So you can never rule that kind of booking out. So I think LA Knight being the outlier, Priest and Logan Paul stand out as the two major people. I mean, Paul will certainly get a whole bunch of heat if they go that direction. And if they want to stretch out the timeline of the Money in the Bank cash-in, you can certainly do that by putting it on a part-time guy like Logan Paul, as we saw in the past with Brock Lesnar, someone who isn't there all the time every week. You don't constantly have the tease of a cash-in. And so when they do appear, it automatically seems a little bit more important because you're wondering if tonight might be the night they cash in versus having them appear every single week and people, you know, wondering that and having that dominate their booking for months.
Yeah. I mean, Logan Paul winning would change the convention, the conventional approach, but LA Knight winning sort of fits, if he stays heel, a heel teasing a cash in. LA Knight getting cheered, ripping on baby faces, still getting popped and cheered. Let's just take a second to explore LA Knight's character a little bit, but also if he won the Money in the Bank, I don't know who he cashes in on. So Seth's babyface champ, he's not going to cash in on Reigns. Right. So there's not those options. He could cash in, I guess, on Gunther and like blindside him and become IC champ, and then Gunther destroys him the next time they wrestle when Gunther's fresh. Like I'm just not quite sure how, like, in, among the options that are out there, what direction they go. They have planted seeds that, hey, maybe they won't go after one of the two world champions. Damian Priest winning as a heel and cashing in against Seth, whether he succeeds or not, you know, whether it leads to a title change or not, fits, I think, the conventions of the storytelling the most. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're scared to have a celebrity like Logan Paul cash in and beat Seth in, you know, under any array of circumstances to build a rematch where then Seth regains it. I don't think they're scared of that either, but I think the names you picked out are the ones that seem most in play, but each of them has a very different path that WWE would take booking wise and even the champion they'd go after, depending on who they go with.
Yeah, I think that you can more or less rule out Roman Reigns from regardless of who wins. So, and that makes at least it makes things a little bit more interesting that they're adding the secondary titles, because you could theoretically send, you know, a lower card guy after one of those, rather than just having him have an uneventful and unsuccessful cash in against Seth. So I think that adds a decent wrinkle to the situation that allows them to go in a direction that they may not usually go in. Because if you look sort of at the history of Money in the Bank, there have been occasions where people who cashed in or people who won the briefcase very quickly felt like there was just no momentum and no way forward for them to actually have a successful cash in. I mean, you look at like 2017, for example, when Baron Corbin won the men's briefcase. It became clear very quickly that Corbin was not going to win that title. And so all of the sort of mystery and intrigue kind of dissipated quickly. Whereas if Corbin had won that briefcase and was able to instead challenge for the Intercontinental or the U.S. title, which now is an even bigger deal because those titles have been reestablished as purposeful and meaningful on either brand, I think it would have been a more interesting run with the briefcase. So I like the addition of the secondary title, ability to challenge for the secondary title added into the fold. And I think it does make things a little bit more interesting for somebody like LA Knight.
All right, let's take this chance to pause and formally introduce ourselves. We've got a lot more to talk about on tonight's episode of Raw. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, June 19th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts throughout the week, including tomorrow's flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, our Blue Logo Show, with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. If you have questions or topics or thoughts on anything and you want to be part of the show, send those in now before we record on Tuesday afternoon. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Looking forward to getting Jason's take on the debut episode of Collision from Saturday night and everything going on in AEW, along with WWE news and more. We hope to have Collision ratings by the time we record, and that will be a fascinating topic to delve into. Do you have a prediction, Brandon, by the way, on the Collision rating, viewership number?
Oh, man, I don't know. I guess when Zach and I were talking about it on Wrestling Night in America last week, I kind of thought that you know, for the debut episode, somewhere in the 700,000 mark would probably be seen as a pretty strong success. I don't think they can hold that long term, but for a Saturday night, I mean, that seems manageable or attainable that one time.
Yeah, I would take the over on that for the debut episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think they did enough with the Punk promo and the history of Punk drawing on that Rampage debut, even if this is a second go around and a lot of people hate him now. A lot of people still love him, and I think everybody who loves or hates him is really intrigued by him still. He's a compelling figure, at least as a one-off. Oh, what's he going to say, and what's he all
sure,
about?
Sure, yeah.
So the question beyond that is, can he shift away from all the stuff that's garnered him attention and start just doing wrestling promos about wrestling feuds and having good wrestling matches and not have all this, you know, I mean, this was a release valve on Saturday that drove that promo and is going to drive viewership. So my over-under probably is more like, I mean, it is Saturday night, it's tough, but I'm tempted to say my over-under is about 890.
Okay.
Yeah. But what's the standard deviation of averages, you know, like is a term, like my standard deviation of confidence is wider than usual. I don't know if that's a good use of that math term, but
I
it could be 200,000 higher, 200,000 lower. Like that's the thing. I think there's a wide variation for my over-under that I'm like 80% confident it will be in. It's a wide number.
Yeah. The thing that kept making me so hesitant, it was just the Saturday night in the summer. It made me hesitant to even with the Punk stuff, it made me hesitant to go higher. But I think you're certainly more plugged into that side of things than I am. I would certainly not be, you know, surprised if it was much closer to your number. I'm very curious about long term though, where they fall because of Saturday night.
Yeah.
That was Zach and I had a pretty long discussion about that, and it's really hard to sort of settle in on because Saturday is such a tough time.
I know, beyond this week, I don't have a lot of predictions and I don't have optimism because they did nothing to set up the second episode. Like people watching that wouldn't even know it's a weekly series. They're going to think it's some Clash of Champions special with Punk returning.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost came across like they didn't even have a guaranteed week two. That the number that comes in could lead to the show being canceled. So we don't want to plan anything and be presumptuous. That's not the case, but that's how little hype went into next week's show. So, but yeah, somewhere between 750,000 and a little over a million is, you know, kind of my confidence range, which is a big range. It could even be below 750 for the reasons that you said. So 700 to 1.1 million is my not brave $400,000 range, 400,000 viewership range. But I do think 890 is my official over-under for whatever that's worth.
Wade, those numbers are exactly what you would get from a contractor if you were building a house right now in this market.
Yes. We do not know what the expenses for concrete and wood are going to be by the time we start pounding nails and pouring concrete. So just give us a range and see if the bank's okay with it. Okay, so the other voice you hear so far in this conversation is Brandon LeClaire. He is a PWTorch.com contributor and a frequent co-host here on post shows and, as noted, Wrestling Night in America. It is great to have him on. He covers pay-per-views and PLEs for PWTorch.com. He used to write reports live on Friday nights for SmackDown. Brandon, it is great to have you back in the co-host chair.
Glad to be here for Raw. Usually, I do Raw on a pretty frequent clip at this point.
Yeah.
SmackDown used to be sort of my hangout, but we've gotten a lot of diversity over the last few months, which is good.
Yeah, I enjoy mixing it up. I do have to say, as unpredictable as collisions ratings are, so is our caller participation. We're really low tonight. Don't know why. It seemed like a interesting show worthy of talking about. I was going to say, Brandon, do you take responsibility for this?
I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Some of the hosts get insecure about like the number of callers we get. I don't think it's. I mean, no offense to people who get a lot of calls. I don't want to like make you take away your point of pride if you're a host on the show sometimes, but like. I don't see a real predictability or correlation to it. So we got a couple of people on hold, and we'll get to calls in a moment here. But that is an invite for you to call. And if you're listening to us right now, either having already called in and not pushed one or live streaming the show, we invite you to call in. The wait will be less than usual. We are anticipating hearing from our outside correspondent soon also, and we have a lot more to get into about tonight's show. But our phone number, if you don't want to join us, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. Another way to participate is via email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I did want to make one question. I appreciate it. Let me give credit to who pointed this out. Danny from Miami, and he wants to make it clear, no relation to Javier. No relation. He said he's not even an acquaintance of Javier. But he did say that when Punk yelled at the camera as he was going up the ramp after his opening promo, I thought I heard that he said, "I'm not here to make stars. I am a star." He actually said, "I'm not here to I didn't come here to be the star. I am the star." So I didn't even really remember framing it negatively because I thought people are going to be happy saying, "I'm not here to make stars, I'm here to be a star." Because kind of initially, it sort of felt like meta, but initially his comment was, his framework in AEW was, I want to just work with young guys and put them over and build people up. Like, and that's what he did, with Darby, and he wanted to, work with some of the young guys and see if he still had it. And that's sort of the storyline. And so when I heard his comments, even though the crowd is cheering, the music was playing, and it wasn't directly into a mic, I misinterpreted it. I thought he was declaring, "Hey, this is different than last time. I'm the centerpiece. I'm not going to be meek and timid and go, I don't know if I belong anymore, and I'm just going to help put over young talent. I'm here to be the star." That's not what he said. So I just want to run that correction and just say, as soon as I can, because I mentioned that on the post show, he said, "I didn't come here to be the star. I am the star." I have to say, I like what I thought he said better, because I don't really see a difference between, "I didn't come here to be the star, I am a star." Like, it's like, "I didn't come here to eat food, I came here to have a meal." Like, they sound like slightly different versions of the same thing, Brandon.
I misheard it at the time, too, and sure. I actually took it, when I was watching the show back, I took it as, like, a tongue-in-cheek dig at the Elite, even though it wasn't that, as if he was saying, I thought he said, "I didn't come here to get stars. I am a star," as in he didn't come to get star ratings.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that would have been – I'd like that the best. I mean, I give star ratings out, but I think, they get – they're like tremendously subjective and silly, but I still do them. And you do too. But it's just like – that's kind of, it's like a war. What is it? Warshock test? Is that the right pronunciation? Where people see different things and something?
Yeah.
So, but nevertheless, I did go back and watch it as soon as I got the email from Danny because I don't want to be wrong on something like that. And he did not say I didn't come here to make stars. He said I didn't come here to be a star, be the star. Anyway, so I wanted to get that correction all the way quickly. Again, our number 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. Otherwise, email us, wadekellerpodcast@pewtorch.com. We are anticipating hearing soon from our on-site correspondent, Darren, who did send us the results of WWE main event, Dana Brooke and Xia Li in action, and then JD McDonagh and Apollo Crews in action in WWE main event.
Dana Brooke was in NXT now.
Well, I mean, does WWE main event count, or is that where free agents can go, or is
know.
It an open door policy?
I don't know.
So Mike Myers will have his written report on those matches on pwtorch.com soon. We'll give a little spoiler warning for those few of you who care about main event spoilers when Darren calls into the show when we bring Darren on. In fact, I just noticed Darren has called in. So we're just going to start with our on-site correspondent here. Darren, I don't need to read your email on the show. I can hear from you directly. Welcome. Thanks for calling in tonight. Darren, are you ready for us? Darren? All right. He called, but he doesn't appear to be ready for us yet. So we will go to him momentarily. And now he flashed that he might be ready. Let's try this again. We'll try it again. We might edit this out, but it's kind of fun. Darren, welcome to the show. Are you ready for us?
Wade, you have me confused with somebody else. This is Dom from Cleveland.
Oh, it's Dom from Cleveland. Oh, well, that's my fault. Oh, you know what? You're right.
I heard you saying Darren, I just didn't say anything, but I thought I was unmuted.
Well, let's just take three and get it right. Let's go next to Dom from Cleveland. You're our first caller on the show. Welcome to the show, Dom.
Hey, man. Yeah, long time no speak, man. How you guys been?
Yeah, good. Thanks for calling in. I assume you attended Raw based on some of the ruckus going on?
Yeah, I did. If you're expecting somebody else, I'll try to keep it kind of brief. I thought you might be interested in the perspective of my two young nieces that I took for their first Raw. Which,
for sure.
Yeah, they're with me now, and I think they had a pretty good time. While it is a bit of a longer show, and it's kind of like past their bedtime, if you will. But still, I think they had a good time. What do you guys think? Do you guys have a good time?
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard of them. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I did. So, what was their favorite part of the show? If they have the energy left. Yeah.
What was your favorite part of the show? They're shy.
Probably Cody Rhodes.
They said Cody Rhodes.
Cool.
Yeah, no,
cool.
I would say Cody Rhodes and the Trish segment. The Trish segment was a bit of a surprise. We actually brought a thank you Trish sign, not knowing if she'd be there. I figured at the very least we'd hold it up during a Zoe Stark or Becky Lynch segment. But when we found out she was wrestling, it was pretty awesome. So it was really nice to see Trish. It was probably the first time I saw her in 20-plus years, having attended some of the Attitude Era shows. But, it was cool. I mean, I think, my overall, perspective of a lot of the, I guess from the live experience was they did a lot of these promos from the stage area, and it just wasn't very conducive for, folks in the crowd that couldn't see. I mean, unless you were, along those sections over at the stage. Because, you can't only stand up so high, I tried to pick up the girls here and there so they could see some of the promos and some of the entrances, but, I don't know why they did that. Like, the Cody segment, I think the Judgment Day had one over there, not a ton, but that was a little annoying. And then, a lot of the matches that were kind of brief, but I could understand why, with the TV time and so forth. I think the main event made up for most of it because it was a really good main event. The crowd was, alive all the way to the end. And, the way they did the finish was really good with the hot tag and, the multiple finishers all in a row. And then Kevin Owens gave a really good promo to just the crowd after Raw went off the air, which I'm uploading to YouTube now. But basically just talking about how he almost gave up on his wrestling career until he wrestled with a small promotion in Cleveland. One of the owners of that promotion, AIW, was there in attendance, and he wished him well. And I guess the other co-founder of that promotion passed away recently, and so just kind of dedicated the night to him, and kind of sent the crowd home. I guess it's a little bit somber, but at the same time, it was really cool to get something personal delivered from Kevin.
That's cool. Did anything else happen after the show other than the Kevin promo?
No, just Cody going around and giving autographs for like 15 minutes, you know, to the folks that were like ringside.
Wow.
He was out there for a while. I could see just as we were trying to leave and looking down. He was down there for a while. They were playing his music on repeat probably at least 3-4 times.
Did they advertise a match at all to help sell tickets that did not take place that you know of?
No, not that I know of. I mean, you know, we were all hoping for that Seth Rollins open challenge, and of course that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, the girls are fans of Bron Breakker, and it was cool to see him on the screen, but, you know, he could have came out. At least that would have been, I think, a highlight for sure. But, you know, I mean, it was, yeah, I didn't remember them advertising the Trish Stratus match at all. So to see that there was that qualifying match, I mean, I think that would have helped sell tickets. Now, speaking of ticket sales, I mean, they had a pretty packed house. Just the opposite of the hard cam upper deck wasn't full. But, you know, otherwise it was good to see a lot of people. I mean, definitely, yeah, probably double the amount of people that showed up for the house show back in December. So that was cool. But I think if they would have advertised Trish a little bit earlier, at least at the same time as they advertised Logan Paul, they would have gotten more ticket sales because she was very, very much over, even with the younger audience. I mean, my nieces wanted Trish to win. The kid next to me wanted Trish to win. A lot of thank you, Trish, you know, cheers in the crowd. So it's awesome to see that this, I mean, at this point, I call her like a legacy star. It's, you know, still so over,
yeah.
And she's only been back for a short while. People don't even really know, I mean, all the stuff she did back in the day, which some of it's probably better that they don't know, but at the same time, it was cool to see that she still has a lot of clout.
Brad, I jump in with a question for Dom.
Yeah. I was going to say, Dom, you nailed it as far as attendance when WrestleTix had reported, like, just before the start of the show, just shy of 11,000 tickets sold, which was just about double their last appearance and just about double the last time TV was there as well. So definitely a sign that the product is a lot hotter and that they're able to pack these arenas much more than they were even just 6-8 months ago. So it's interesting, too, to hear about Trish because it sounds like she is, you know, putting people in seats in a lot of ways when she's advertised for shows, and that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Like when they heard she was wrestling, they were already starting to cheer. Thank you, Trish. I mean, she wasn't even out yet. So I was a little bit, you know, surprised by her drawing power for sure.
Yeah, there were a couple of moments during the show where it felt like the crowd got really deflated because of either what was going on or the results. But the one in particular was. Otis and Chad Gable, their loss to the Viking Raiders. Did you notice any sense of disappointment, or were the Viking Raiders over at all in that win, or was it?
No. The Viking Raiders were not over. Nobody was about them, and if you thought that their props looked bad on TV, they're 10 times worse in person. I think everybody around me was in consensus that it's too much. Like, I don't know if I heard a comment from someone said, like, who are these guys? The Viking Raiders? Like, that seems like a bit much. And I don't know. Yeah, they're kind of overdone. And, you know, it was awesome to see how over Otis was. I mean, Otis and Gable, like, even when their music hit, everybody was a lot more excited to see them than I can remember in truth shows. And I was at the Raw last time there in Cleveland, and they did not get the ovation that they did. Now, granted, they were a lot more heelish. They were going against RK-Bro. Randy Orton was out there. So, I mean, yeah, they pale in comparison to the popularity of Randy Orton even still today, but Otis was super over. You know, my nieces didn't know who Maxxine Dupri was, but, yeah, she seemed to have some kind of allure, if you will. They did a great job. I mean, you know, I think the thing that really kind of turned me around, though, was that main event, honestly. Like, it was worth the wait, even when I started to feel like the show was dragging on a bit. And I hadn't really been a big KO and Sami Owens fan in recent years. I definitely always wanted the Usos over them. And I still do like the Usos a lot more. But at the same time, they showed really what great performers they are. Like, those two guys are just incredible performers. They know how to get the crowd going. They know how to, you know, play their roles perfectly. And, yeah, those guys deserve it. And they really do deserve a lot of credit. And, you know, sure, I was cheering with everybody else in Montreal for Sammy, even though I love Roman, he's my guy. But tonight really solidified, I was like, okay, you know, these guys are some of the best in the world. I mean, we saw three of the best wrestlers in the world in the main event tonight, and they really put on a great show. So, the other guys that stood out to me that I never really cared for would have been Ludwig Kaiser. That dude is an immaculate heel. Knows how to work the crowd, knows how to do everything he needs to do as a heel. And then in main event, we saw JD McDonagh, which I'm still not a huge fan of, but the guy can sell like Shawn Michaels did in his prime. So those two guys stood out to me as people that I never really noticed that much before, but seeing them live definitely gave me a better perspective on their work.
Yeah, I put in my report at pwtorch.com that main event felt like a crowd-pleasing main event. And, certainly a really exciting final few minutes, and obviously Cody getting really good reaction from the crowd. Dom, how did all the references to Cleveland work with Miz and Logan Paul in particular, even Kevin Owens after the show doing it? But do you think that got the crowd worked up and it was done effectively, or did it come across as pandering
really.
Or ineffective?
It's interesting because Miz seems to have a lot of fans, and they didn't care what he said. Like, even my nieces, I think, would have preferred to see Miz win. Even when we said, I don't even know if the match got off, but, basically, they, even when they heard all that there'd be mystery partners for Cody, they're like, oh, maybe Miz and Logan Paul will do it. Like, Miz and Logan Paul are super over in Cleveland. And, I'm not even really a huge Logan Paul fan, but I did have a sign for him just because I thought of something clever. It was like Paul 216 or whatever. I was just trying to think of something clever. So instead of like Austin 316, we did Paul 216. I didn't even know what sign I was going to bring until I knew he was going to be on the show. And I figured, okay, I'll do something like that. But, they're just so over. All the kids love Logan Paul. There's a ton of Logan Paul signs. So it didn't really matter what they said. They could care less. It was just so funny. It was like you had you're in an abusive relationship with somebody. You just love them so much that you'll take all their crap. that's the feeling I got. Like they barely, like I don't even remember anybody booing either of those guys, even when they were talking crap about the city. Sure, there were a few.
What was the low point
for the general?
Dom, what was the low point of the show in terms of crowd investment?
Jeez, I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't know. What was the most boring match you guys think?
I don't want to volunteer in this year because it was only 2 minutes, but, that was near the end of hour one.
Possibly that one, I guess. I almost forgot about that one since you mentioned it. What else was there? I'm trying to remember. There was another kind of semi-low point, but... Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I was impressed with the crowd's energy. I mean, they stayed on it throughout the night. Also, they stayed, Cleveland classy with that, Dom is a P-U-S-S-Y chant. I don't know if they had to mute that on the TV stream. Oh, it did? Yeah, I mean, they were pretty strong on that one. So they did it at least two or three times. And I didn't even feel very comfortable going along with it since I had two nieces. Mexican, but it was just typical Cleveland, keeping it classy.
Who were the top babyface reactions? Was it just Cody above everybody else, or did Becky's run in get more cheers, or who got the?
It would have been Cody, I guess. I mean, Cody and Trish even too. I mean, really, it was pretty. I mean, I don't know. I guess ovation wise, it died out pretty quickly. But there was a lot of excitement for me. People were standing like during the commercial break. So Raquel came out. Everybody knew Trish was next. Nobody sat down. They stood up. They're like, Trish is coming. Trish is coming. So everybody was just up. Who's the most over guy? Whose entrance? Honestly, the best entrance. And I might be a bit biased. LA Knight. His entrance, I think a lot of it was the shock factor because he was a SmackDown guy. We didn't expect to see him tonight. I wore my LA Knight shirt proudly. And a lot of people, even when we were walking around the arena before it even started, were just, all over the place. I think he's super over. I mean, he's definitely super over. And his entrance, people were super pumped. Everybody was just so happy to see him. And, yeah, that was a big one for sure. He's got a lot of potential, and it's kind of now or never with him, given his age. I really hope that he succeeds and gets the money in the bank and at least gets one title run. I don't care if it's 2-3 months. Just, you know, let him have a little glory.
Brendan, anything else you want to ask Tom?
Talk a little bit about the return of Tommaso Ciampa. Did you get the sense that the crowd was into cool. him? Did they knew who he was? Or
nobody knows. I don't mean to say nobody, but like definitely wasn't well known. I mean, it wasn't super well received. I think he's just been away a bit too long. I think that his you know, main roster career in general has just kind of been not necessarily a dud, but given his injuries and everything else, it just any of that momentum that he had coming out of NXT is just gone. I think the best path for him now and I think it would do Johnny Gargano just as much good would be to just get those guys back together and get back on the tag team scene where they had a lot of chemistry, and I think it could make a good addition because nobody cared. I mean, really, he's a great wrestler. He really is. He knows what he's doing in there. But just, I don't know, his gimmick is just, there is one, you know, there's just no gimmick, and people just aren't really excited to see him.
Very good. Dom, anything else you want to add before we let you go?
No, I don't think so. Hopefully you got your other on-site correspondent that can chime in a little bit more. The girls are pretty tired, so I'm going to quit yap. Thanks for taking the call. Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you again. It's been a while. All right. Yeah, attendance lately has been good. Like I mentioned last Friday, SmackDown was, I think, the biggest gate in the history of that market, like in Kentucky, and it's been kind of more the rule than the exception for WWE, drawing really really good big crowds. They didn't even need the Bloodline on this show to do it for Raw.
For their configurations, I mean, they're selling out almost consistently. Like, they're opening up seats, like day of show, a lot of stuff like behind the usual areas where the hard camera is, and then those corner lower bowl sections that are partially limited view. They tend to open those up day of show, and that ends up giving you an extra 800-900 seats, and I'm sure they move a lot of those in walk up. So they're getting close to legit sellouts for their setup for a lot of these events.
All right, let's bring Kyle from Baltimore onto the show. Kyle, welcome. What is on your mind about Raw tonight?
I want to get into Becky interfering and now caught me, pretty much gave Trish the win to be in Money in the Bank. I really didn't really expect that, and I don't know if I I don't know if I like it or hate it or just don't, or because I'm conflicted, because Becky kind of wants her in it because she wants to get her hands on her, but then it's like it, but it's, I don't know, I'm thinking to myself, and also another thing too, now that Trish is in the match, I don't know why Zoe was so happy, because what if both of them climb up the ladder, it's going to be like a Bayley EO thing too, where like who's going to turn on who, because that's what it's going to be. So I don't know why Zoe was super happy that she shares this in the match, but what do you think about this aspect now, Tristan in the match, and just this entire feud with Trish and Becky? I personally think it needs to be over with. It's been, I think, a waste for Becky Lynch. I feel like she should be doing something different, maybe feuding with Zoe herself and not Trish. But what do you think about that dynamic with Trish in the match now?
Yeah, Brendan, talk about the setup for the Women's Money in the Bank and the developments tonight and the points Kyle brought up.
Yeah, I kind of felt it coming, the way that they set up the match between Raquel and Trish. It didn't feel like they were going to give Raquel a clean win over Trish, and it also didn't necessarily feel like Trish was just going to get a pin on Raquel, because they tend to protect her to some extent. They seem interested in doing stuff with her down the road. So I thought that there was some sort of wonky finish coming, one way or another, and we got it with Becky Lynch making a mistake in the heat of the moment, going after Zoe Stark and hitting Trish. So Trish gets in Money in the Bank. I don't think that you're going to see even necessarily a tease of any type of turn with Trish and Zoe yet. I think that Zoe will use her spot in the match to try to assist Trish in winning, which I think for the time being is the right move. Zoe is in a good spot. She's with an act who is very, very over, as evidenced by the crowds. And like we just heard from Dom, Trish was, you know, getting great reactions tonight, and people were very invested and interested that she was there. So I think that's a good move, and I understand the hesitation to want the Becky and Trish feud to continue. It has been going on a while, but I do think that it's been a net positive for both women overall. I think that it's helping Becky reestablish herself fully in that the man character as a strong babyface. It's keeping her away from the title a little bit so that Rhea Ripley has the summer to breathe and kind of do her thing. And it's also giving Trish Stratus some big, you know, big pay-per-view style matches to work with Becky. I think they worked well together. They had a really, really physical match at Night of Champions. And I do think that the blow-off will come probably at SummerSlam where Becky gets her win back. And I think when all said and done, it'll have been good for both women.
Did you like how they handled the Trish Stratus advancing but by DQ? When Becky, you know, had her heart in the right place, and it backfired as a way to create a sense of tension between Becky and Raquel too, that can play into, because they're trying to have all these crosshairs, all these different dynamics going on, and that for what they were trying to do, I thought they executed it pretty well.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, a disqualification is never necessarily what you want to see, but I think this was on the high end of the use of that cop-out finish. I think that, you know, you set up a future match down the road with Raquel and Becky if you want to, like you already mentioned. Then they use that moment to set up Raquel and Rhea Ripley having kind of a moment before the match. And then you also have the tease of Trish and Becky reigniting their feud in Money in the Bank. I also really liked Becky's promo afterward, where she took the blame, she put it on herself. She said that, you know, she essentially created a taller mountain for her to climb, and she said if she's going down, she's going to take Trish and Zoe with her. I also liked that she referenced her history with the other competitors in the match and said that she doesn't really have any friends in there. I like it when wrestlers reference prior feuds that they may have had with people that are in these multi-person matches, even if they're not currently feuding with them. So I thought Becky did a great job tonight.
Yeah, Kyle, back to you for your response to that. Oh, Kyle, I muted you. I didn't mean to. Go ahead, Kyle. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
I would say I agree that that Becky now her history was damage control, and then she has enemies in the match. She's going to be a tough time to handle to get the briefcase. So I did like that too, and so it'd be interesting. It'll make the match more interesting for Becky if she can win the briefcase, and so hope she does. But we'll see. But speaking of just the championship itself, for Rhea Ripley, I know I mentioned last week too that to me I feel like that Rhea Ripley is just dangling her time in Judgment Day, and I just think it's kind of a waste for her because she's kind of like doing nothing really. She's in this, you know, this thing with Natalya is not, it's just a complete waste of time, and so I just think for Rhea Ripley herself, because beyond Becky Lynch, I could think of four credible opponents for Rhea at this point. They got if they're going to hype up Raquel to mean something to feel credible as an opponent. I know they have history from NXT, but they got to have to try to make Raquel feel more important beyond the fact that they're both dominant because of their height and strength. So what do you think about this Raquel Rhea feud that they're teasing for SummerSlam? That's the direction.
Yeah. Rhea Ripley, Brandon, just kind of generic observation as we respond to Kyle's topic, is she just seems to be growing in confidence by the week. Like her presence, the way she walked up to Raquel and just stood on her face, and the way that she was interacting and interfering in the main event, like she's got a confidence stride to everything she does. She's acting now like she belongs. When she first arrived on the main roster, I was told she was overwhelmed because working for Paul Levesque was very different than working for Vince McMahon. Working in NXT in that bubble was very different than all the pressure she got dropped into. And she was young. You know, she had less experience than so many people. And there was that, you know, sense of, do I belong? Maybe an imposter syndrome. And man, has she overcome that. I don't know in real life if she has, but boy, has she ever in terms of showing any like hesitation or flinching in what she does. And the way that she walked up and stood opposite of Rodriguez, I think one was strong for Ripley, but I think it was a boost to Rodriguez too, to have someone like that to play off of, who is that confident. Cause you know, Rodriguez has had that challenge of just being sort of smiling and just sort of seeming like, you know, she's told what to say and how to do things. And that felt kind of like a natural moment. Like, yeah, I'm looking at someone who's my rival and we're not part of that Sasha, Bailey, Charlotte, Becky, group. We are kind of the next generation of people who are going to be here. And it felt like they almost thought they were sharing a moment on screen when they had that stare down.
Yeah, I thought that it was a good moment for Raquel, and she's going to need a few more of those strung together to feel like a really credible challenger for Rhea at SummerSlam, if that is the direction that they go. They haven't done a great job with Raquel as of yet. I mean, better than some of the other women that they've mishandled, in the sense that they do, as I mentioned earlier, try to protect her to a certain extent and have been doing so for a while. So I think that she is someone you have to turn to as a credible challenger for Rhea, and I do think that there is work to do before SummerSlam. But yeah, I think that most women are going to benefit greatly from working opposite of Rhea Ripley right now. I think, Wade, like you said, her confidence is through the roof, and she's a star. She is an act that people like to see, whether they like to boo her or they cheer her or they're just infatuated with the on-screen relationship between she and Dominic Mysterio. I think that what she's got going right now is really special, and it's a lot of fun to watch unfold, even if the challengers lining up beneath her don't seem quite at her level yet.
Kyle, back to you.
I think now what I said, my focus now to Seth and him constantly defending the title. I just don't like him doing that. I think back to other baby faces before. I really think of Becky or AJ or even Alexa, even though she was a heel, but still Alexa. She rarely defend the titles on TV, and I just don't think and. The fact he's defending the title on NXT tomorrow just seems just very dumb to me. They wanted to promote Braun Breaker. You think it would be more for him to be on Raw than on it for Raw so NXT, but whatever. I just think him defending the title every single week on TV is very stupid. He should solely focus on Finn Balor, which that's why they did that entire thing tonight, which was great with because I mentioned lots of guys that I not care for that that whole sing-along thing, because it took too long. I thought it took away from the promo between Balor and Rollins. I know that way you disagree in that, but I thought it was so kind of glad that they did had Balor attacked him and then had that huge crowd off the steps. That was pretty cool. But what do you think though in terms of just Seth constantly defending the title and him defending the title on NXT or just on TV in general and just not on pay-per-view? You think it's overkill? Because I totally can't think of this.
Brandon, what's your take on that?
I think it's a calculated move to try to build prestige behind a new championship without lineage. They created this world title without any lineage behind it. The idea behind putting the championship on Seth Rollins first was that he was going to be a fighting champion who was there every week, unlike his counterpart in Roman Reigns. And I think that they are working really hard to try to create a stark contrast between the two. I don't anticipate that if Seth's reign goes several months that it will always be this way. But I don't mind them taking this route in the early stages of his run to try to get him some strong matches, some strong, credible defenses under his belt, and try to raise the prestige of this new championship. It also helps from a match perspective. It gives WWE a big match to hang their hat on for their weekly TV show. So if you can announce that Seth Rollins is going to defend his world title in the main event or somewhere on the show, it generates intrigue, a lot like the U.S. title open challenge for John Cena did back in 2015, when they established a run of really, really great challengers and great matches that got people really invested in tuning in to see who the next one was going to be. So I think there's benefits to it. I understand the disliking the idea that these title defenses are having that are happening on TV, and that it could somehow cheapen the pay-per-view or the premium live event defenses. But I think the key to that is just making sure that you have a stronger challenger for the premium live event and ensuring that you have an established feud for that match rather than it being existing in just the open challenge realm. As far as the appearance on NXT goes, I think, again, that goes more to the business side of things rather than storyline. I recall hearing recently that there's a push within the company to make NXT a viable brand. I don't know what NXT is doing ratings-wise right now, but this might also just be a play to pop a rating.
Yeah, and maybe introduce the Bron Breakker, a few potential future star in Bron Breakker. So there's a possibility that it's multi-pronged. In other words, it's mm-hmm. a strategy. NXT, by the way, just for people who aren't tracking the numbers, the last few weeks did the June 13th one last week did 581,000. Before that, 615, 607, 578, 564. The kind of the range that they're in. Definitely a full notch below what Dynamite's doing, and a couple notches below Raw, and about a fourth on average, maybe a little less of what SmackDown's doing. So, just a little perspective on that for those who aren't following ratings closely. Kyle, any quick closing words? Because we do have our scheduled on-site correspondent who's called up, and we also have Scott on hold.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think last thing I was mentioning real fast too, I think off that I don't know this, but they promoted Damian Priest and Seth Rollins for New York for the championship. I don't know why that is. That was because Priest just lost, so for them to do this match is because Priest is from New York is very odd to me, but I'll just leave it with that.
Thanks, Kyle. Yeah, Priest losing lately does kind of undercut their ability to play that card later with him, unless the idea is, by the time they want to push him, it'll be as a babyface. It seemed there were a couple weeks where he seemed a little more stand up, and maybe they were hinting at him going babyface. He hasn't been too heelish in what he's said and done. So the idea of booking philosophy as well, if you're going to turn someone, then they can lose before they turn, because turning kind of hits the reset button on how people perceive them. Go ahead, Brent. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that'd be quite a big mistake right now. I think that Priest, we've seen Damian Priest as a babyface on the main roster. He got the full-blown reset within Judgment Day, and I think it's helped him tremendously. But I don't know that he has grown enough as a character on his own to survive a babyface turn. I think that the intrigue with Damian Priest still resides in his relationship to Ripley and Dom and Finn Balor in Judgment Day, and I think it's too early. I think it's too early to pull the trigger on trying to push him as a major singles babyface.
What have you thought of him losing lately? Do you think it's – I mean, someone's got to lose. You don't want all cop-out finishes. Balor is in a world title program. I think they kind of want to protect Dom a little bit at this point, given how much heat he's getting. So, I mean, I kind of get it, but what's your take on that choice?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of becomes the designated fall guy, in the sense that you're heating Balor up for a world title program, so he can't take the fall. And then Dom is about to face Cody, so you want to keep him strong and keep him viable for Cody. So I guess that just leaves Damian Priest as the one to take the fall by default. and he's got money in the bank. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, it's not at all unlike WWE to have the eventual money in the bank winner go on a string of losses on the way to winning the briefcase. So I think it made sense, even though it seemed a little off-putting just based on the way that he's presented as of late. I thought for a moment they might go with either Sammy or Kevin pinning Dom rather than Cody, because you know obviously you don't want to get Cody to get the pin over Dom right now. One-on-one match. But where you know Sammy and KO can do it, and Dom's whole thing is that you know he's a loser. So that would have been fine with me too.
All right, very good, Kyle. Appreciate the call. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure. We'll now go to our planned on-site correspondent, Darren in Cleveland, but Scott in Long Island, you are on deck after that. Darren, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Wade. Good evening, guys.
Tell us what was the highlight of the show tonight for you.
Well, it was a great show. First Raw for myself and my son in 7 years, and second show since the pandemic. The main event, the six-man tag, just blew the roof off of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Great, great match. The intensity, the crowd was in it. When Kevin Owens tagged for the first time going against Dominic, the people just went crazy. I would say Cody, Sammy, and Kevin had the biggest pop of the night, then Seth Rollins. And the extraordinary heat on Dominic is unbelievable, and it continued tonight. So those are the two big takeaways from that match. It was great. The crowd.
Do you think that's part of what's selling? Is that part of what's selling tickets? Is just going to boo Dom?
I don't know. The crowd was really into it. They were calling him some names that I can't repeat right now. Not even on a podcast.
We got bleeped. Yeah.
My 12-year-old son was there, too, with me. So I just think, you know, how corny the Dominic character started last summer and how it's evolved now, it's this great opera and story where people want to go and see him get his butt kicked and just rag on the guy. And he is the number one heel out there. I think he had the biggest heat tonight. And then Logan Paul, a Cleveland guy, had the second most heat, in my opinion, tonight, followed by Finn Balor.
Did Logan Paul tell us about how when the TV showed him, he was already sitting in the ring on the ladder. Talk about the lead up to that and kind of what response he got, because everything was off camera, off live TV until the moment that he started talking.
Yeah, it was interesting. The lights were dim, and I turned away for a few seconds. I saw the ladder there and someone sitting on it, so they put the lights on right before they came back from commercial, and there was Logan Paul, and he got some soft boos. And when they came on TV, when he started his script, that's when he started getting the heat, you know, ragging on Cleveland, and people were really, you know, letting him have it. And you know, Cleveland fans, you know, as soon as you start dogging the Cleveland sports teams, and you know, you're going to hear it. So I thought it was a great script. It was a great material. He came out. You know, I have to leave Cleveland to to make it big, just like LeBron did. So that was some great comments right there that he made. And he was over more than The Miz tonight. I think The Miz has gotten stale for Cleveland fans. But when Miz came out, when he came out after the failed open challenge of Seth Rollins, he did get some heat, but when it was a surprise when Ciampa came out, and Ciampa got a nice reaction from the crowd, nice win. But I think they're setting up Logan Paul pretty good for Money in the Bank in London. So great place to have him in Cleveland, you know, getting that heat, getting a little rub there.
Brandon, jump in with a question for Darren.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's cool to kind of get separate perspectives on the Ciampa reaction. I had asked Dom, who we spoke to a little bit earlier, and he was underwhelmed with the reaction in his particular section. So it's good to know that, you know, in different sections there were some reactions for Ciampa. It did definitely seem subdued on the broadcast, but I'm glad to hear that, you know, there were some positive reactions for him. Did you feel like the sort of the increase in like stage promos tonight made a difference in terms of crowd participation and involvement or anything? They went to that more often than they typically do, especially like the Cody Kathy Kelly stage promo.
It did. It was a nice change compared to the previous Raws I've been to. It seemed like it was more fast paced tonight. You didn't get bored. And I liked the nuance they had with the Cody Rhodes interview. I know, Wade, this is big for you. You know that squared circle is sacred, and you know the analogy. You don't do an interview for a football player around the 50-yard line. You do it off to the side. So I kind of liked that, how they did that tonight, and even the Judgment Day in hour number one, you know, from the stage. So I thought that was a good change up, especially how they did the Kevin Owens a skit, you know, and the anger management throughout the broadcast too kept it going.
Talk about the reactions for the different women wrestlers, and if you got any kind of sense of who's over, who the crowd is into, who WWE would be smart to keep investing in, or are they over pushing anyone?
I think the two biggest pops is Rhea Ripley. She got a babyface pop tonight, no doubt about it. And I think the one that got the bit larger pop was Becky Lynch coming out during the match with Trish Stratus and Raquel Rodriguez. Even though she cost Raquel the match, you know, even though it didn't hurt her, but it came out like a heelish move. But Becky just blew up when she came out. I think they need to, you know, keep Rhea, you know, top of that division, you know, run that momentum. You know, we'll see how it goes, how they, you know, do they turn her full babyface later on? And I don't think they need to at this time. But I do like what I see out of Raquel Rodriguez. I think she's got a bright future. She was shaking Trish Stratus like a rag doll. Tonight, pretty impressive. You know, she's got the look. I think she carries herself in the ring very well. You know, just improve those mic skills a little bit, and I think she'll be okay.
Was there a low point of the show for you and or the crowd? You talked about maybe it dragging a couple times.
Yeah, I think the low point is how Shinsuke Nakamura, how he has fallen from grace since he first got into the WWE. When his music came out, you know, like you mentioned this, Wade, years ago, the rock star, the violin playing, it wasn't there tonight. Boy, it's just, very, very disappointing. He is such a talent, charismatic, you know, very, 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 very disappointing. They could do much better with Shinsuke, sorry.
From a fan experience, was there a reaction in the arena to a strong reaction that stood out to what aired on the video screen? Because there's, you know, quite a bit going on backstage, especially with Sammy and KO, for instance, and the ongoing thing there, the stare down with Rhea and Rodriguez. Was there a moment that fans seemed to really react to, or multiple moments? And was there any, like Bron Breakker's promo, for instance, was there a pop for seeing him? Anything stand out, either high or low, in that regard?
The Bron Breakker segment was a little subdued. I thought when Seth Rollins came out saying they took him to get checked out, he'll be back tomorrow, that got a nice pop. And the Matt Riddle exchange with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn got a nice pop too. Those are the things that stood out, you know, from backstage.
Did you sense any letdown or lingering curiosity over whether Seth would actually have the open challenge?
I thought going in that they're in Cleveland I expected Johnny Gargano to come out and accept that challenge, being a Cleveland guy, get him over a little bit. So it's kind of disappointing that he wasn't there. But Tommaso Ciampa was a nice surprise, you know, coming out against the Miz. So I was a little disappointed that they didn't, you know, pay off the open challenge. The that opening segment with Finn Balor got a lot of heat. It happened pretty quickly as well. He just dominated stuff. And I liked when they had it backstage where, you know, I waited 7 years for this, you know, to go back on that storyline where he won the Universal Championship and Seth injured him when he couldn't, you know, keep it. So I like how they're going with that storyline, you know, from 7 years ago since he was the first Universal Champion. He wants payback now.
Brandon, do you want to jump in with any other questions?
Yeah, I was just gonna ask the Logan Paul segment. We talked a lot about Logan Paul and the content of his promo and whatnot, and his strong reaction in Cleveland. But did you get a sense? Did the crowd have a strong favorite in terms of who you thought that they were looking for in to win Money in the Bank? I know LA Knight got a big reaction, but everybody seemed to get a decent reaction coming out before that big brawl.
You hit it right ahead, L.A. Knight. I think he probably had the fourth biggest pop of the night. He was over with the crowd, and I liked how they did that segment with the different guys coming out, except for Damian Priest. You know, given, you know, here I think I have a shot at winning this. Here's what I'm going to do. So it keeps you know a little mystery who's going to win that match. So I love L.A. Knight, and he's great on the microphone, so hopefully they give him a continued more exposure. But I would say he probably had the fourth biggest pop of the night behind, you know, Cody, Sammy, Kevin, and then Seth. I think L.A. Knight was right after, you know, those four gentlemen.
Darren, anything else you want to share from your experience that we're not prompting you with questions about?
Yeah, no problem at all. In closing tonight, they celebrated with the baby faces, of course, after it went dark. But I thought a special moment tonight. Kevin Owens got on the microphone to talk about, you know, his career and how he struggled and worked hard and kept going on the independent scene for 15 years before signing with WWE in 2014. And he had mentioned one of those last stops that kept him going, that saved his career, was a little independent promotion in Cleveland, Ohio, which got big pop. I knew where he was going. And he mentioned AIW, Absolute Intense Wrestling. Now, I've seen him there many a times along with Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae. And he really brought in big props to the owner, John, and also the late co-owner, Chandler Biggins. And that got a real good pop. And he was very, very emotional in that speech. So it was very heartwarming, very special coming from Kevin Owens. So I thought that was really great, giving the local promotion some notoriety there.
Did everyone stick around for that, by the way?
I would say probably 70% of the people stuck around. You know, they're probably thinking, you know, is it going to be a dark match? But I didn't see any dark matches advertised for the event, and they closed it with the baby face. You had your top three baby faces there, and they're just doing their thing, you know, signing autographs around the match, around the ring, and then everyone started, to leave right after Kevin Owens' speech. I would say, I've been to a number of Monday Night Raws, especially starting the Attitude Era. Some big ones with the Mike Tyson, the one with the Nitro split before WrestleMania in 2001. And they had probably 17,000, 18,000 people there. So it's scaled back now. I would say probably 12,000 people there, probably a good crowd, probably 80% capacity. They had three-fourths of the third level of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, tapered off with the curtains. And, of course, you had the stage as well. So it was a great crowd, probably 12,000, like I mentioned. You know, the T-shirts were all over the place. You had the Bloodline, LWO, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, probably the two I've seen the most. He has some throwback shirts, Cactus Jack, Stone Cold, John Cena. And not kids I've seen these, but I saw a lot of adults carrying different WWE Championship belts around the arena, which was pretty cool to see. So it was nice seeing that different variety.
Darren, anything else at all you want to share from your experience tonight?
No, I think that was it. Thanks for having me on, and I think the one big change, one big difference tonight, it was a little bit more fast-paced. I kind of liked a little bit more of the matches thrown in, you know, compared to previous Raws where you had a long time to wait before commercial segments and other, you know, behind the scenes. So I thought it was pretty – the 3 hours, three and a half hours, I'm pretty fast tonight.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's what you want to hear when you go to a show like this. Very good. Darren, appreciate you calling. Hopefully hear from you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Wade. Thanks, Brandon.
You bet.
Bye.
All right. Brandon, I want to shift. Scott from Long Island had to drop off, apparently. If you are listening and you want to call, there is no line right now, and you are certainly invited to join the conversation. 347-215-8558. In the meantime, a couple other topics to talk about. Are you enjoying the direction they're going with the Alpha Academy and Maxxine Dupri? Because it feels like a different course than they originally had envisioned for Maxxine being infatuated with Otis, and now they're just keeping Gable and Otis together. What do you think so far, and where do you think it's going?
Yeah, I'm on board with it. I mean, I've been enjoying it for what it is. I think that Otis is a better babyface than he is a heel. I think people are naturally inclined to like him and the ridiculous facial expressions and the stuff that he does. I think that Gable is just an unbelievable athlete who, when he is a babyface and he can really show off that athleticism with some of the more flashy moves, the crowd just naturally gets behind him. And I like Otis and Gable as a babyface tag team. So it's a positive all around for me. I think that the addition of Maxxine is fine. I would much rather they fit her into this gimmick than to just sort of toss her by the wayside and forget that it was a storyline with Otis, which is something that they would, you know, have done in the past if they decided to go in a different direction than what was originally intended. So I've been enjoying it so far. I enjoyed Otis's rise to fame in the early days of the pandemic era when they were in the performance center. So this has been fun. It's been fun to see Otis in a position of, you know, somewhat prominence again. And I hope that they start taking them a little bit more seriously, because the Viking Raiders act has never really clicked. It's never really gotten over in any significant way. I agree with what Dom said, our first live correspondent earlier, when he said that it just feels like a little too much. And so I was a little disappointed to see them get the win over Otis and Gable tonight, and it felt like it deflated the crowd a little bit too. They just wanted to see that team win and get a cool moment.
Yeah, very much so. Where do you think it's heading?
I mean,
is it just they're going to be together, or is there some, you know, are they foreshadowing some twist down the road with Maximum Male Models or otherwise?
I hope they're not, at least not for now. I would much rather see them just play this out for a bit and see what the crowd does with it. I mean, they're clearly invested. They're clearly interested. I just don't see any reason to mess with it right now when you've got something that could potentially be a fun little lower card story.
Yeah, I agree. Is there anything they could have done, by the way, with the Viking Raiders that would have worked? I mean, they keep trying and trying, since minor reboots.
I mean, I think just not going so heavy-handed on the gimmick. I think that they can be these guys without it being their entire personality. And I think that what they were in NXT, you know, as the War Raiders, obviously that they don't want to use that name anymore, and I understand why, but you could just get back to their roots. I mean, get back to sort of the Smash Mouth presentation of these two guys who are good wrestlers and are certainly, you know, a team that has a bunch of chemistry. I think the trajectory of that team has been really, really disappointing, and I just don't think that level of a gimmick is going to work in this era. I think that they feel like a relic of the 80s.
Yes. Yep. I agree. And I don't have an answer to my question. That's why I guess just dropping the whole gimmick entirely, but then, you know, we just haven't gotten a window into what they would do otherwise. So, yeah. How about the what they've done with Matt Riddle since his return? He got a win over Kaiser. Kaiser is really talented, and, you know, they had a good match, what we saw of it. But with Riddle, I don't have a sense of how we're supposed to feel about him. If he is a babyface on the rise, or is he more post-Randy Orton kind of found this lower level that he's going to be at, where he's fed to Gunther, but nobody really thinks he's ultimately going to win. Some of his charm that he had playing off of Orton is sort of missing. They're trying to incorporate that with KO and Sammy. How is this phase of Riddle working?
Yeah, I think that unlike the dynamic that Riddle had with Randy Orton, where Orton was sort of begrudgingly falling in like with Matt Riddle, Kevin Owens doesn't have that. Owens is consistently and permanently annoyed by Riddle. And I think because the crowd identifies so strongly with Kevin Owens, they, in turn, are adapting to his take on Riddle. So I don't get the sense that the clamoring for Riddle moving up the card is quite as strong as it once may have been. And that's not to say that the crowd can't like him and can't view him as a babyface. I more so mean the way Kevin Owens is so serious about not taking Riddle seriously that I don't think the crowd is going to take Riddle seriously. So I think that he's fine as a summer challenger for Gunther. I think you kind of pointed to where this goes. He puts up a valiant fight, but in the end, Gunther beats him. And I think that's the right move. But getting the win over Kaiser, you know, he's kind of the designated fall guy with Giovanni out right now. It's fine. I mean, it was a good solid TV match, and it gets Riddle ready for Gunther.
Sammy and KO, they weaved a storyline into the show of KO needing to watch his temper. And if he succeeded in not snapping and too much, that Sammy would not bring it up again. But if he did, then that would be an issue. What did you think of that as just sort of a way to have KO and Sammy be on the show more often and also interact with other people?
Yeah, I thought it was a little curious to bring it up now. I mean, they've obviously been building to this moment, but it sort of felt like Sammy kind of addressed it out of nowhere and very quickly, not gave Kevin an ultimatum, but kind of put him in a spot very quickly that I thought they'd take a little bit longer to get to. But, I mean, with it coming to what appears to be a happy conclusion, at least for now, I don't think that is a huge deal. I continue to find Owens, you know, the most relatable character on the show because he's so hell-bent.
Because you have a hair trigger temper?
No. because he's constantly the only one willing to point out, you know, all the logical fallacies within weekly booking.
Yes, there you go.
So he's you know, I don't want to see him lose that edge in a way. But the yelling and rage-filled moments can get a little bit over the top, so I'm fine if this is their method of reining it in just a little bit, but I do still want Owens to point out hypocrisy and lunacy when he sees it.
Do you think it's gotten too comedic and it's undercutting anything, or does it work well and it's fits in, you know, they can get serious when they need to.
I think they're teetering on that edge. I think that Owens is able to turn it on when he's in the ring. Outside of the ring, he's a little bit, you know, he's playing less of the straight man, less of the prize fighter, and more the comedic role to Sammy's serious role, which is a change in their dynamic, which isn't necessarily always a bad thing. I think that they've walked the line okay so far, but it certainly would not be unlike WWE to cross that line at some point.
When they did the initial segment with them, they went right to the after commercial break to Chelsea Green on social media being caught by various citizens flipping out on at a restaurant or coffee shop and at a driver and all that. I probably want to put that in back-to-back segments with KO, because it's like you go from one person who's flipping out to somebody else who's flipping out, and it I would have just spread that out, just formatting critique, I guess. But what do you think of what they're doing with Chelsea? Because she's really good at playing that part, and they leaned into it tonight. Was it cheesy or just kind of a cool contemporary video montage to portray, without the obvious tongue in cheek, but it's, you know, baked in that, you know, they staged some of these things and people just started publicizing what an annoyance she is in real life.
Yeah, I didn't dislike it. I think it's probably the natural evolution of what she was doing backstage with Adam Pearce, which it's good that they're getting away from that, because as much as I enjoyed it, you can only carry that shtick for so long before it just gets overbearing and before Adam Pearce has nothing left to add or say. I mean, he can only put her in disadvantageous situations so many times before, you know, it just becomes a bit of a chore to watch. So I'm glad that they got away from that and into exploring a different side of the same presentation, a different side of her, the same personality. I don't mind the team with Sonya. Now that they've progressed beyond the, we're going to complain to the manager, we're going to complain to management type thing, their team makes less sense. But I also know that this was a hurried and rapid decision sort of after losing Carmella to her pregnancy, because she made a whole lot more sense as a partner to Chelsea.
I thought that what they did with Chelsea tonight would have been good for damage control early in their run to establish. And I talked about that, like showing clips. They could be selfie movies or citizen movies submitted on social media or to WWE, where you show them and how annoying they were out in public as part of their, you know, establishing why you should dislike them and how they are obnoxious everywhere. So I this is similar to something I think that they could get away with doing more. Not too much, obviously, because, I mean, then it just becomes kind of, you know, trite and shtick and gimmicky. But I liked this. I thought that this was well done and sort of believable without too much suspending your disbelief.
Yeah, it's sort of on a smaller scale, a curated presentation of the MJF character in the sense that is MJF out in real life. If you meet MJF on the street, you might get that moment that they could conceivably play.
Exactly. Yep. Totally agree. The Indus Sheer push and giving Shelton and Cedric a chance to actually have a match with them, still beating them in just a couple of minutes. You know, we talk about Viking Raiders. Can Mahan and Sangha do more than the Viking Raiders? Well, yeah, be more successful than the Viking Raiders is sort of the killer appeal tag team.
Depends on how far they want to take that gimmick. I mean, right now they're sort of the dominating larger foreign heel. I mean, can they be more than that? Perhaps. I don't know. I don't. Do you get the sense that Jinder is meant to be more of a mouthpiece, or that this will sort of turn out to be more of a faction?
I think mouthpiece. Yeah, that's my thinking now. I think they're not really talking about him being formidable. They're not talking about his career. They're not drawing attention to him not wrestling. And so, yeah, I kind of think they're going to be a tag team. I mean, I hesitate because I'm not ruling out that they don't pivot him into a singles role or add more people or something like that. But I think this is just kind of where my best guess would be this is where it's going to stay.
Yeah, I think that if you do transition him to a wrestling role and you put him as sort of the leader of this group in a wrestling role, it immediately defines it down to something lesser than, because I mean no amount of rehab can really put Jinder at a point any higher than he currently is. So at least if he's in a managerial role, it's a new avenue for him, and he can perhaps become, you know, a viable talking piece for a heel tag team. But WWE's track record with these types of teams is just so poor that it's hard for me to have anything but, you know, incredibly low expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've looked, you know, pretty good with very limited...
Sure.
You know, very limited options for the fans watching. Mm-hmm. You know, can they look impressive enough in the way that they're featuring them to have fans think that they're a threat to KO and Sammy and want to see that match? And they're not there yet, but that seems to be kind of where they want to go with this while, you know, other things are going on SmackDown in the division.
And then can they, when push comes to shove, if they are being put in a position with KO and Sammy, can they rise to the occasion in the ring? Because people expect strong in-ring performances from KO and Sammy matches. And it would be a step backward for them if they have to carry these guys to even, you know, to even get through something decent. So that's important too. I mean, having a good match against a team like KO and Sammy, who are known for having these great matches, can go a long way in helping you, you know, rise to the occasion and be part of that conversation.
Finn Balor getting a significant singles push. I feel like, you know, most fans see this as he's not going to end Seth's title reign. He's not going to be a centerpiece champion on Raw for the second half of the year going into 2024. Is it still working with that, I would argue, baked in terms of Balor? Is he entertaining enough? Are they doing the angles enough? I mean, the crowd, unless there was a ton of sound sweetening, seemed to be really into booing Balor and the attack on Seth. How do you grade what they had to work with once they made the decision to go with this as Seth's first full-fledged feud?
I give it a good enough. I mean, I give them, you know, a B+, A minus as far as what they've done so far, in the sense that I think that Balor has been rejuvenated significantly by Judgment Day. I think he's in a good place as a heel right now. I think that on paper, people will be interested to see Seth Rollins and Finn Balor in a big title match. I think that they are going to be aided by the fact that they don't have to carry the show. They certainly won't be viewed as the top match on the card. I think you can argue that one or both of the Money in the Bank matches will be placed above them, as well as the Bloodline Civil War. So they don't have to live up to being, you know, the main event on the show. And I think that does the story well, because I do think at this point, at this stage, the way that Balor has been treated over time, it would be hard to sell him as a legitimate main event match. But this is a good spot, and I'm glad to see Balor getting a big title match, even if it does kind of, like you said, seem like a relative foregone conclusion. I think that it'll be fun. I think that the angle tonight served its purpose well, and I really, really like Seth's promo from the local medical facility, or as normal people call it, the hospital. Where
they don't want everyone calling the local hospital.
So many towns
are just one or two hospitals. So that's such a, you know, I get why they went back in the day they did that, but it sounds so silly.
I know. And realistically, I mean, they could call the local medical facility too. But
there's a lot of like urgent care centers though. So, you know, it's not as narrow, but yes, no, it's not like people still won't, but back in the day, like people used to call hospitals all the time when they would run a big angle where they got hurt. That is an era that, you know, that happened a lot in previous eras.
Yeah. The thing that I really liked about the Seth promo was at the very end when he just said that, you know, this is the Balor that he was looking for. This is the Balor that beat him 7 years ago, as if to say, like, I didn't take you very seriously before, but now you actually have a chance because this is the real Finn Balor. I thought that was a good touch.
My final topic for you, Brandon, is Bronson Reed. What do you think of what they're doing with him to take advantage of his potential and set him up? What is his likely ceiling over the next couple years based on the trajectory he's on now and how he's performing in the opportunities that they are giving him?
Man, I was going to bring this up to one of the two on-site correspondents, but yeah. we had talked already about sort of the subdued reaction for Ciampa and then the sort of like melancholy or disappointed response when the Viking Raiders beat Otis and Gable. But I wanted to touch on Bronson Reed too, because
yeah.
It seems like consistently week after week, he is just not getting crowd reactions for anything other than that splash. They pop, they do sort of the, oh, like for the splash, like, cause it's a uh-huh. big move. But outside of that, there's no reaction when he comes out, there's no reaction to his offense. There's no reaction when he wins. And I'm just wondering, like, what isn't clicking there? Because he's got very impressive offense. He's being booked against wrestlers that are you know, high motor in the ring, can work, can keep up with him, and he can keep up with virtually anybody. The matches have been solid, you know, when he's been given time, and yet it's just not there, and I'm not sure why.
I think we need to hear more from him.
Yeah.
You know, people need to kind of get to know what makes him tick. What's his character? What's his personality? What's compelling about him? And they were, you know, a month or so ago, there was like, you know, he's dressing up and they were letting him talk and he's got this accent. And I just don't think people really know who he is. So, like, I think he has a really high upside, but I don't want them to give up on trying to figure out what his voice is as he gets this push, because it's hard to if you push someone and they don't have that character development alongside yeah. it and they don't get the crowd reactions, it can doom them. You're better off not getting a push if they haven't figured out how to portray or frame you yet to get you over. But he's talented, and I think all the pieces are there, but they're just – yeah, it's – I think he has a high ceiling, but where they are right now with him, it's just like he's just sort of, you know – in the mix along with Ricochet and Shinsuke, and it doesn't feel like he is – it feels like he should be above them in a way, unfortunately, because
right.
Ricochet and Shinsuke, we, you know, which they were in a better spot right now in certain ways. You know, there's reasons. But with Bronson, he's definitely the one with more potential, and you don't want to see him just feel like a mid-carder.
Yeah, it felt very odd to him be the one that was left out of Money in the Bank. I mean, I get that it's not really his match because of his size, but it's actually it could have been a really good opportunity for him to show off how well he moves. And it's unfortunate because you put him in a situation like tonight where he bests Ricochet, even though he's not in a match with Ricochet, and he beat Shinsuke Nakamura. So the guy who couldn't qualify for Money in the Bank just took out two competitors in Money in the Bank and sent the message like, well, these guys don't mean anything. They're not going to win because this guy who isn't even in the match just took him out. So, yeah, I thought it was curious to keep him out of the match. I do agree. He needs to talk more because he is not, you know, for as big as he is and as agile as he is, he doesn't have a unique look. He's, you know, you can name a dozen wrestlers with long brown hair and you know, like a goatee. And then as far as the attire goes, very similar to someone like Otis, for example. He doesn't stand out beyond his size physically.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think that is necessarily a disqualifying factor, but it can be a limiting factor if he doesn't get the other opportunities that will make him stand out.
Yeah, yeah. I think, well, that's well put. Brendan, anything else from Raw tonight you want to bring up before we sign off?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything other than maybe like Natalia's situation.
Oh, that's right.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, not much to say about
yeah.
it. I've been, I
I'm
guess,
intrigued.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Mean, you know, within within reason. You know, I'm sure. intrigued with what they're doing. Is, you know, I want to prove I'm still relevant and all that. I mean, it's a hook. It's something.
I think the biggest thing for me is just the fact that it's consistent storytelling for a lower card woman not in the title picture, which is just not something we get very often.
Right. Yes, that's absolutely a good point. We did not see them give any attention. I mean, Natalya, if anyone is going to get it, you know, a veteran like her who's you know, been around and is respected for her work in the ring, you know, I can definitely see that being that they'd come up with something for her so that she doesn't just get lost, you know, at this stage of her career. All right. Well, very good. Brandon, appreciate it. Great having you on. And it was fun talking to a couple of people who are in the building tonight. We'll, I'm sure, talk to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun. Was fun to talk Raw. And it's always good when you have a show that, you know, moved at a pretty decent pace and was easy to watch. So.
Excellent. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you Wednesday night after Dynamite also.